Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the subject of property when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage, and the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. Well, you know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from the Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, you know, our princes and politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, but we haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years, now have we? You know, that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process. It doesn't come from our politicians, our lawyers, or our bureaucrats either. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, I could echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power in America is in our courts, not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedures, available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And then click onto our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org, and go to the archives page. All right, we're talking about the subject of property. So in the last program, I raised the prospects that maybe you don't own as much property as you maybe had originally thought. You know, things like automobiles and children and wives and homes and big screen TVs, you know, things that we just kind of take for granted. And we use terms like, that's my car, my house, my wife, my kids, and so on. And then when we take a look at the legal consequences of who really owns your wife, your children, your car, and your house, we find out that, hey, wait a minute, when we look at the definition of property, it's something different than what we actually practice out on Main Street. Now, you may think that you have some property that you actually don't have. You may even treat it like it's property, tell people that it's property. Now, there was a time in America when we used to own wives, children, automobile, means of living, and things like that, businesses, and big screen TVs. But that's not the state of the law in America today. I doubt if it is in Australia or Canada either. So something has happened, and I think we should take a look and see if we can identify the seminal moment when property and property rights were divested from us, and they were replaced by this first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of property, not the establishment of property, not the free use of property, not the total, absolute, undiminished right to dispose of property any damn way you want to, but a controlled modality of the use of property. We'll tell you how to use it, where to use it, when to use it, and how much it's going to cost you to use it. We'll let you call it yours, but we'll tell you what to do with it. Now, looking at Bouvier's again, now this is Bouvier's 1914 Law Dictionary. I'm on page 2750 under the subject matter of property. And we've been reading here some of these kind of unusual statements that relate to this thing called property. But more importantly, it's the subject of property, subject of. It's not the actual physical thingy, but rather your right to use it. You know, you can have a physical thingy over here, but if you don't have the right to use it, you don't have property. You go to an amusement park, and at the amusement park, you want to ride on the Ferris wheel. You don't own the Ferris wheel. You pay a fee, and you ride on somebody else's Ferris wheel. You pay a fee, and they let you use their Ferris wheel, tilt-a-whirl, or roller coaster. But it's not yours, and you don't call that your property. You say, I went to the Walt Disney roller coaster. I rode on the Six Flags roller coaster. That's correct. You were riding on somebody else's roller coaster, and it was the Six Flags, or it was Disney's roller coaster, and you got that one correct. So then why are you saying my car, my house, my car, my kids, my wife, and so on? So going on here, in the treaty by which Louisiana was acquired, property comprehends every species of title, inchoate or complete, legal or equitable, and embraces rights which lie in contract, executory, as well as executed. What are we talking about here? Hey, listen, you know, when we bought the Louisiana Territory, it was acquired. And it has some property, and it comprehends every species of title. Title? Well, I happen to live here in the Louisiana Purchase Territory here in Missouri, and I'm living on a piece of ground here. And sometimes people come up to me and they say, is this your farm? And I tell them, no. Well, whose farm is it? And I tell them, well, there's a contested issue of fact between two superior parties, each one of them claiming that they own this farm. And then sometimes they'll say, well, what are you doing here? I'm just renting it. Well, who are you renting it from? Well, right now I'm renting it from Ozark County, a subdivision of the state of Missouri. Well, does the federal government own it? No, they signed off. Yeah, we got a land patent on it. The federal government, they signed off. They don't have any claim to it one way or the other. Well, who's this other guy? Well, there's a guy by the name of God. Yeah, some guy that calls himself God, Elohim, the creator, you know, reverend, holy, and true. I mean, he's got a number of titles over here. He claims to own it. Huh? Yeah, listen to this. There's a title claim made here in the Bible. I don't know if you've ever heard of this before, but it's in Leviticus 25, verse 23. Leviticus 25, verse 23. And in this claim, I'll read it to you. It says, the land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, and you're strangers and sojourners with me. Leviticus 25, 23. So here's this guy comes along and says, the land shall not be sold forever. And I sit here and I say, wait, hold it a minute. Wait a minute. That's why we have real estate brokers and real estate salesmen, so we can buy, sell, and trade land. And this guy comes along and says, the land shall not be sold forever because the land is mine. The land is mine. And don't we have people running around out here buying, selling, and trading all the time? We got banks out here financing houses that you people are buying. And these houses are located on land. I don't know if your preacher ever told you this story or not, but it's against the law for you people to be buying, selling, and trading land. Did you know that? I know I don't want to make excuses here for God and have to argue his point. I just wanted to tell you that's what he told you. And that's why we have preachers, and that's why we have legislators and governors and presidents and people like that, and college professors and people, so that they can fix God's mistakes. I mean, this God is just full of mistakes. The Bible's just, have you ever noticed anything as full of mistakes as this? Now, I took a look at it one day, and I said, well, gee, maybe that wasn't a mistake. Maybe this guy does have a superior claim to it. I mean, he walked into town one day, and he told a guy named Pharaoh, he said, let my people go. Yeah, he sent his agent Moses in there. He says, hey, go tell Pharaoh that these are my people, let them go. So Moses pulls into Cairo one day, and he walks into the palace, and he says, hey, Pharaoh, listen up. All these Israelites you got over here, they belong to God, and he sent me to deliver a message to you. He says, hey, let them go. Pharaoh said, what? Why, those people are mine. I own them. That's my property. Well, I've owned these people for 430 years. I got them from my daddy. It was an inheritance. It was a present. He got them from his daddy, who got them from his daddy, who got them from his daddy, who went way back here a long time ago. And they're mine. I own them. And no, I'm not going to let them go. So right away, you know, we had a contested issue of fact. Here's God comes along and says, hey, they're mine, and I want to take them. And Pharaoh says, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. I've had them 430 years. They're mine, and I'm not going to give them up. So God, through Moses, his agent, said, well, I'm going to lean on you, and I'm going to cause some really bad, nasty, terrible things to happen over here called plagues. I'm going to send 10 plagues over here to you, and I'm going to persuade you that you ought to let these people go. So he started sending them some plagues. You'll see this in Exodus, about chapter, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, something like that. Let me flip over here and see if I can identify that for you. It's Exodus, early on here, you know, before they got to the Passover in chapter 12. Yeah, here's chapter 9. There's some plagues going on there. And then here's chapter 7. Moses was 40 years old. He was 80 years old when he started. Here we go, chapter 8. No, it's chapter 7, the plague of blood. The Eternal spoke unto Moses. He said to Aaron, you take your rod, stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, and upon the streams, and upon their rivers, and upon their ponds, and upon all their pools of water, that they may become blood, and that there may be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and in vessels of stone. So for 3 days, they didn't have anything to drink. I don't know what kind of blood this was. It wasn't there. Couldn't tell you. It just uses the word blood. Sounds like just ordinary, everyday garden variety cow's blood, or dog's blood, or pig's blood, or something. I don't know with any specificity, but it seemed to be blood. And so here comes plague number one, then there's plague 2, 3, 5, 9, you know, so on. And then finally, plague number 10. One day, Pharaoh woke up and he says, my God, get the hell out of here, would you? And take all of your cattle and dogs and sheep and pigs and the rest of it and just get the hell out and leave us alone. Now, what was going on here? Do you ever stop and ask yourself about this? Well, here's what the bottom line to this was. These people called Israelites were in slavery. And they enslaved themselves. They voluntarily sold themselves into bond servitude. And the problem was that they didn't have the capacity to do that because they were already the bondservants of this guy that we call God. You see, he had already made a contract with their great-great-great-great-granddaddy Abraham. And under that contract with Abraham, he owned those people. I know, sounds kind of crazy, but you know, that's the way the law works, and I don't make it that way. I'm just a reporter, I just want to tell you. And these people sold themselves into bond servitude, but they didn't have the capacity to do that. You know, let's suppose that, you know, you felt like you wanted to sell yourself, your wife, and your kids into bond servitude to me, and you came over and you said, hey, George, I want you to pay, you know, $5,000 and buy me, the wife, and the three kids over here, and our dogs and cats and pigs and the rest of it over there. We want to become your bond servants. And do you know something? I can't do that. I'd have to tell you, I'm sorry, Bob, but you don't have the capacity to sell yourself to me because you don't own your body, you do not own your wife, and you don't own your children. And your owner has a contract with you, and he prohibits you from doing that. I mean, I'd be happy to oblige you, you know, if you had capacity, but since how, and if I did that, let's suppose I paid the money, and you came over, and you're working away over here, and one day, the government learns about this, and they come over, and they say, George Gordon, let my people go, under the 13th Amendment, which prohibits involuntary servitude. And I point out, but it isn't involuntary servitude, it's voluntary servitude. These people came to me, they were dirt poor, and said, please, please, buy us, and put us to work, and feed us, clothe us, and house us, and one thing and another. And I say, now, government, butt out and leave me alone. These are my people, and they're my property. You know what the state of Missouri would say to me? They'd say, hey, Gordon, you need to wake up and smell the coffee here. These people do not have the capacity to sell themselves or their children to you. In fact, I prohibited that by law, by statute. That's the problem that Pharaoh had. He didn't know that. He thought he owned them. You know, he was probably acting in good faith. Unfortunately for him, he didn't understand the law any better than most Americans, Canadians, and Britons, and the rest of us understand the law today. Pharaoh, you know, was sincere. He thought that they were his, just like you thought that was your car, your wife, and your kids. He thought those people belonged to him. And then the real owner comes blowing into town, and he says, hey, let these people go, and if you don't, I liked old Mao Zedong, you know, he had a wise old saying. Yeah, it was old Mao. He said, political power comes from the muzzle of a gun. God blows into town. He says, let me show you about blood. Let me show you about hail. Let me show you about the firstborn. Finally, Pharaoh woke up one day and he says, you know, I don't think I can deal with very many more of these plagues. I guess the next step would be, well, now come back and kill your secondborn, thirdborn, and fifthborn, if that's what it's going to take. But, you know, I'm here to collect what's mine. Those people are mine, and I'm taking them. So Pharaoh recognized this superior power from the muzzle of a gun, and he acquiesced, and he said, well, okay. Bitter pill to swallow, but okay, I'll let him go. Now, going back over here to Bouvier, he goes on to say that property in the strict legal sense is an aggregate of rights which are guaranteed and protected by the government. And in the ordinary sense, it indicates the thing itself rather than the rights attached to it. So in the ordinary sense, the way that you and I learned this in high school civics with Mrs. Lowry, remember, 10th grade, Mrs. Lowry, and she was explaining to us civics, our Constitution, and the way the laws work. You know, in the ordinary sense, it attaches to your house. The term property embraces every species of valuable right and interest, including real and personal property, easements, franchises, and hereditaments. All right, that's something that we ought to look at. What's a franchise? I know in California they got a thing over there called the Franchise Tax Board. Franchise, it's a privilege. My daddy gave me a privilege to ride my ward's Riverside bike. I had a franchise. That was a right. One time I talked about my right to drive, and then everybody said, wait a minute, Gordon, driving is not a right, it's a privilege. Remember that? You went to high school driver's ed, didn't you? And the instructor said, hey, this is a privilege. Well, that should have been your first clue that we're not dealing with rights and property. They weren't lying to you. So when I hear somebody say, this is my car and I've got a right, you know, I say, huh? I'm not really sure. You know, I was talking to a judge one time, his little Judge Smith, and then I was spouting off to him one time about rights. I was in court, and I was spouting off about my rights to this and my rights to that. And, you know, and I'm an American. By God, I got rights, and I'm here to claim them. Well, one day I was walking down the hall, and the door was open to the judge's chambers, and he saw me walking by, and so he motioned to me, come here. So I walked over to the door, and it was, you know, half open. He says, hey, you got a minute? And I said, Judge, for you, I got all day. He said, well, come on in and sit down here, son. So I came in, I sat down, and he said, I've been reading some of this paperwork that you've been putting in here. And we chit-chat, talked about the weather and one thing and another. You know, all that nonsense that people talk about before they get down to where the rubber meets the road here. And he said, I notice here that you're claiming that you've got a number of rights. And he said, I was just wondering, if you knew how many rights you had? And I thought about that for a minute, and I said, well, I don't know, Judge, you mean how many by number? He said, yeah, how many rights do you think you have? And I said, well, you know, I've got the right to vote, and I've got the right to property, and I've got this right, and I named off, you know, five or six rights. And he said, that's good. That's good. I'm glad, you know, most people, they couldn't name five rights. And you come in here, and you tell me you got these rights. Now, when I went to law school, he intoned, he said, we learned that we had some rights, and these rights totaled about 1,100. So I'm going to pass that on to all you boys and girls out there in radio land. If you want to know, as an American citizen, how many rights you have, the number's about 1,100. He said, but there's a caveat that goes with all these rights, and it deals with the doctrine of laches. So you might want to write that down in case you've never heard big words like this, L-A-C-H-E-S, laches. He said it attaches by laches, and your rights are limited to the number of rights that you can articulate on the courtroom floor. And if you don't know you have it and can't articulate it, claim it and demand it, then you don't have it. Okay, so if you think you've got a right to your car, then you've got to be able to come over here and claim that automobile. You've got to claim that child. You've got to be able to use, occupy, and possess it. And if you don't have use, occupation, and possess it in possession, then you don't own it. And that goes with rights. Now remember, a right is an incorporeal property. So you have corporal and incorporeal property rights. Let me see if I can find that. It says so right here. The latter consists in legal rights as choses and action, easements, and the like. In a strict legal sense, land is not property, but the subject of property. The term property, although in common parlance applied to a tract of land or a chattel, in its legal signification means only the right of the owner in relation to it. It denotes right over a determinate thing. Property is the right of any person to possess, use, enjoy, and dispose of a thing. So you actually aren't talking about the use of the dirt, the rocks, the minerals. We're talking about the use of it. I don't own the rock, the mineral, and the earth. I own the use of the rock, the mineral, and the earth. I know you probably got a warranty deed one day on your property over there. Now, that warranty deed professes to transfer your ownership in the rock, mineral, and earth. But I got to tell you again, there's a guy over here by the name of God, and he says, hey, the land shall not be sold forever because the land is mine, and you're strangers and sojourners with me. Now, you know, that guy says, the heavens are my throne, and the earth is my footstool, and I own that. I listen to these guys, they're talking, you know, from the government, these are the government agents, and they say, you know, from NASA, we're going to go out and colonize the world, we're going to go out and colonize space, and we're going to go take over the moon and Mars. They're planning that right now here in the United States. We're planning to go back to the moon and claim it. Then we're going to go out to Mars and claim that. Columbus came over here, and he said, hey, listen, I'm claiming this in the name of Isabella, the Queen of Spain. This is her piece of real estate. By God, I'm going to come over here and take it away from you Indians. And I'm going to give it to her. Because after all, she owns me, kind of like little Georgie owns the bicycle, but Daddy owns little Georgie, so kind of owns the bicycle by default then, doesn't he? And I kind of chuckle when I see that. Have any of you people ever thought about the guy that claims that he owns the heavens? Maybe we ought to back off here a little bit. Talk about, hey, maybe we could go out and use his moon. Maybe we could go out here and investigate his planet Mars. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Now, if he can't use, occupy, and possess Mars and the moon, I guess we can come up there and take it away from him. But, you know, when push comes to shove, Pharaoh thought he's going to go back out there and take these people back. So he met up with them over at the Gulf of Aqaba, and he said, hey, listen, I'm going to capture all you people and take them back. And Moses opened up the Red Sea. Then he's the guy that held his rod out over the Red Sea, and it divided. Did you think that was Moses that did that, or did you think maybe that was God giving Moses a little hand there? I never did think Moses had the kind of power that you'd have to utilize to split the ocean open and walk through it. And so this guy, God, he's a pretty powerful guy. He's pretty tricky. He makes heavens and earth, and he's an inventor, says he works a lot. And then he says he owns that. Says he owns the heavens, and he owns the earth is his footstool, and tells us not to run around making merchandise out of it. Said, I'm going to give you an inheritance here in the land, but I don't want you to make merchandise out of it. I want you to pass it on by inheritance. I want you to claim it and use it. He's got some rules that go along with it, just kind of like the state does. That's why I said, you know, a little earlier, when somebody comes here and they say, hey, you own this farm? No, not mine. The guy I'm renting this from, and there's this contested issue. In fact, I got to pay property tax to the state of Missouri, and then I got this other guy over here who says, hey, I've got this land Sabbath, Jubilee. I've got these 15 land laws, agricultural laws. Hey, Gordon, you want to use my ground? Follow my rules. I said, yes, sir. And so I'm sitting here kind of in a quandary. I ain't quite sure who owns this piece of ground, but I do know who doesn't own it, and it's little Georgie. So, you know, if you ask me who owns it, I'd say, well, I'm quite sure there's a contested issue here, but I know who doesn't own it, and I don't. All right, so now we got that much out of the way. referring to the historical development of the law relating to chattels. Chattels? Well, chattels, that's the stuff, like big screen TVs, shoes, dressers, furniture. Referring to the historical development of the law relating to chattels, it said that possession is prima facie evidence of ownership. So when you're in possession of the Hertz car, that's prima facie evidence of ownership. Now, that doesn't mean that you own it, but it makes it look like you own it. It's called prima facie evidence. You know, it looks like we have wives and children. It looks like we own automobiles and houses and big screen TVs and stuff until the personal property tax guy comes along. Now, this is a sleeper. This is a sleeper. I'll tell you a story here. One time, you know, I'm doing my thing. It was on a Saturday. I'm just kind of doing my thing, and there was a knock at the door. I was living at the Alameda Apartments at the time in Alameda, California. I was in apartment number one. Manager lived in apartment number two because he liked that side of the building better, and so it looked like apartment number one was the manager. Knock on the door, answer the door, and the guy looks at me. He's got a clipboard, and he says, I'm the Alameda County Property Tax Assessor. I'm here to assess your property. I think he said personal property. But, you know, I'd had this happen before, and I said, sir, you're making a mistake here. See, I'm not the manager. You need to go across the hall to apartment two and talk to the manager. He's the guy that you want to talk to about property. He looks at his clipboard, and he says, is your name George Gordon? And I said, yeah. He says, well, I've got the right party. He said, I'm the personal property tax assessor, and I'm here to assess your personal property. I'm just a punk kid, still had pimples on my face, and I ain't sure I had too much hair. And I said to the guy, I said, what? What property do I have? And he said, personal property. Goes to show you how dumb I was. So I needed some more direction, and I said, well, what is it that you want to assess? And he says, I need to come in and look at your furniture, guns, paintings, personal possessions, and then make an inventory of them so that we can assess them and then send you your tax bill. And then it started to dawn on me. I said, wait a minute, are you saying to me that you want to come into my castle? I don't know. I went to public school. They told me a man's home is his castle. I don't know where they got the idea, but that's what I'd heard. And I thought this was my castle. And this guy says, he wants to come in here and he wants to look. I said, do you want to come in here and look at my dresser and count my socks and underwear and t-shirt? Yeah. Yeah, I'm coming in here and I'm going to open your dresser drawer and I'm going to see whether or not you got condoms in your dresser drawer. I want to look at your coin collection. I want to look at your guns. I want to look at your paintings. I thought, hey, this guy's getting kind of personal, you know, wanting to look in my dresser drawer and count my dirty socks. So I kind of took offense at that. And at the time, being young, you know, young and kind of wild, I guess. I said to him, I said, now, I didn't say son because he's about the same age I was. We're both about 20, 23 years old, 22, something like that. I'd just been married a short time. I was 23 when I got married, so I'd say, you know, he was about 23. So I said, now look, you see that stick down there and underneath the door here? That's called the threshold. And that's the threshold to my castle. And I used that term. I said, a man's home is his castle. This is my apartment. Notice how the word my apartment came in there? I didn't say that this was Greg Dixon's apartment. This is Dixon's apartment house. I said, this is my apartment, number one. People get like that, don't they? It's kind of like, these are my bondservants, these are my people, this is my car. All right, so I said, this is my castle. And if you step across that threshold, there's going to be blood all over the place. And some of that blood is going to be yours. Now, you better get the hell out of here while you still can. He was really shocked at my aberrant behavior, my trucking with violent attitude. And so he left, which is what I told him to do. And I never saw him again, and then I never paid any personal property tax, and nobody ever came by again and said they wanted to look in my dresser. To look and count my dirty socks. Now, after I learned the law, I was really shocked to find out that those socks, those shirts, that dresser wasn't mine. And he was there representing the owner, and that he wanted to charge me rent for the owner for me using the owner's dresser and dressing in his clothes. And when I understood that that wasn't my socks, wasn't my shirts, wasn't my guns, they weren't my coins, wasn't my furniture, I was amazed. Then I really felt bad. I said, well, gosh, I shouldn't have done that. That's almost like telling Hertz they can't have their car back, and if they get up at him, they'll bust him in the nose for messing around with my car. And then you find out, wait a minute, you don't own this car, you're just renting it from Hertz. You're just the tenant here, you know. This isn't really yours. I know we use the term, this is my car, this is my apartment, but hey, it really isn't yours. You don't have a property right there. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Hey, listen, it's halfway point. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, so be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives page, and download that free general law CD package for yourself, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors, the publications that we're endorsing, will reciprocate or recommend us or endorse us. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network, or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then we invite you to go to our website, georgegordon.org, look us up, check us out. And if you can't do that and you want to call us direct, you can do that by calling 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the subject of property. And the subject of property now are the rights to use the property. Now, when you rent that Hertz car, you have a property right. You don't own the car, but you have a right to use it. That's a property right. And if I come along and interfere with your property right, that is your right to use this Hertz car, that would be a theft. That would be a taking of your property against your will, over your objection, and without your consent. That's a theft. That's protected by thou shalt not steal. So while you don't own the car itself, you have a right to use the car. Even Hertz can't take that away from you. Let's try it. You get down, you pay your rent, and you've got the Hertz car, and you're out driving around in a Hertz car, but they change their mind. They ran out of rental cars, and they say, wait a minute, we rented that rental car to this guy over here, George Gordon, with a discount. But now we've rented all of our cars. We don't need to give a discount. Let's go out and take that car away from Gordon. He rented it for a week, and it's just been 3 days. We can get twice as much money by renting it to Tom over here because there's a shortage of rental cars. And so they're just going to come out here and take this car back. Hey, listen, we've changed our mind. We don't want to rent the car to you for the rest of the week. We're taking it back. It's our car. We own it. We've got the title to it. Oh, that isn't going to fly. No, sir, rebob. Now, once the week is up, they don't have to re-rent it to me. You know, they can say, no, we rented it to you last week at half price because, you know, it was a special. You know, it was on sale. Sale's over. Now you got to pay the full bore rental price, which is double what you're paying. Well, you know, if they want to do that, they can because that's their car. So you find this with credit cards, you know. You've got a credit card, and people get really incensed about this. They've used the credit, and they're using the credit card, and pretty soon the credit card company sends you a notice, and they say, hey, we're going to double your interest from 15 to 30% starting next month. And you really get incensed, don't you? You say, well, I've made all my payments, and all of them on time, and I've been a good customer. Well, hell, we're not denying that. But that's not the issue. The issue is we want to double the interest rate. And if you don't want to pay us, then just, you know, if you don't want to pay the 30% interest, shut your mouth, pay us what you owe us, the $10,000 that you got on the card, and then we'll take our card back and you can go do business with somebody else. People get kind of incensed. You know, that card isn't yours. Oh, I know you use it. You know, it's got your name on it. But as a matter of law, if you were to take a look at who actually owns that credit card, you'll find out Bank of America is the owner of that card. And you're the holder in due course, and you're using their card. Just like, you know, this is my money. Please look on the face of that $20 bill. It says Federal Reserve note right on there. They're not lying to you, son. And if you'll go look up the word note If you look up the word Federal Reserve and note and eleemosynary trust, you know, I think that'd be a great education to you. Now, you didn't learn that from Mrs. Lowry in the 10th grade, and I'm not sure that Mrs. Lowry knew that either. She wasn't trained in law. She was trained in teaching. She was a teacher. She wasn't a very good one because she didn't have very much to teach. She didn't really know very much. She taught you what she thought she knew, and that was probably wrong. But anyway, I just thought I'd pass that one on to you. A lot of times, you know, we think we've got things we don't have. Now, you've got a right to use it. Now, let's take your driver's license, remember? Driving is a privilege, but the license is a right. Sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? You bet. See, you have a right to the license. So if the state said, well, wait a minute, you got blue eyes and blonde hair, and we ain't going to send you a license because you got blonde hair and blue eyes. Hey, wait, can't do that. You got black skin? No. You can't do that. You have to give that license to anybody that comes in there and meets the qualifications. You know, they set down the rules, of course, and the qualifications. So if you come in there and you meet the rules and qualifications, they got to give you a license just like they do to any and everybody else. And that's because you've got a right to the privilege. That's a property right. So you've got a right to vote, but voting is a franchise. Voting is a privilege. Not everybody can vote. Convicted felons, they can't vote. Come on, wake up. Voting is a privilege. It's not out there for everybody. It's just out there for some bodies, not every bodies. And so the guy that has the franchise, that's the state, they have this franchise, and they say, hey, would you like to participate in our franchise? We've got a voting franchise over here. It's a privilege. Now, you have a right to the privilege. Well, if you can qualify. And if you can't qualify, well, then you don't have the right to the privilege. And so there was a time when they used to have things like poll taxes. You know, you can come in here and exercise the privilege, but you got to pay for it. And then one day the courts woke up and they said, well, but you can't do that. And then they said, well, you can vote if you got white skin. And then the courts woke up one day and said, but wait, you can't do that either. So the state now comes along. They set up the rules and regulations, you know, as to how this franchise is going to be used, just like my daddy did with my wards Riverside. You know, hey, hey. You can ride your bicycle over there, but you got to make the bed, take out the garbage, and feed the dog. And if you don't do that, I'm going to take your bike away from you for another week. And that kind of tells you who actually owns the bike, who actually owns the franchise, who actually owns the credit card. You know, when you get right down to it, you really don't own very much. In fact, let me show you about how much you do own. You know, kind of like the judge saying, hey, how many rights have you got? Well, it's about 1,100, but they're not available to you unless you know what they are. And I don't think the average person could cite 10 rights. If you think you can, why don't you just pull out a piece of paper and a pen right now and write down all of the rights that you believe that you possess. Now, I told you how many are available to you, not how many you possess, not how many you can utilize, not how many you can exercise. I said, how many rights do you possess? And that's all of the rights that you can articulate, write down, claim on the courtroom floor. Start writing. And when you get to 1,100, that's going to be about all there is. You don't have 1,200, 1,500, or 2,000. Now you've only got 1,100. Can you articulate 1,100 rights, boys and girls? All right. Now that kind of tells you about how many rights you got. But we can get even more particular than that. One time when I was a little tyke, about 5 years old, my daddy used to send me down to Harry Connick's Corner Grocery, Harry Connick's, and he'd send me down there with a 3x5 card, and it would say something on there. I don't know exactly what it said because I was 5 years old. I couldn't read. But later on, I kind of got to thinking about, well, what was on that card? And I think it was something like this. It said, "Dear Harry, please give little Georgie a quart of milk and a loaf of bread, maybe a pack of cigarettes or something, you know." And then he'd sign it, Daddy Gordon, and then he'd put a P.S. down there. I can remember the P.S. I don't know what the P.S. said, but I remember P.S. was on there. I can remember that years later. "I'll pay you when I see you." So my daddy gave that to me. "You take this down here and give it to Harry, and he's going to give you some bread and milk and bring it home." I take the note down, and I reach up to the counter. That counter was way up high. I had to reach up to reach it. And old Harry would smile down at me, you know. He was an old man. And then he'd say, "What do you got there, little Georgie?" And he'd come out from behind the counter, read the note, and then he'd pull off a little bunch of grapes for me, you know, off the box. And he'd hand me those grapes. In those days, see, you didn't just walk around in the store and help yourself. You went into the store, stood behind the counter, and you told Harry what it was you wanted, and then he'd go get it for you. So anyway, here's old Harry. You know, he's out here, he's picking up the bread and milk, and I'm chomping on my grapes, and God, I loved him. Every time I went in the store, he's always giving me a little kid, you know. He's always giving a little kid a bunch of grapes or something to eat, or an apple or something. So he'd take me over to the door, and he got the bread and milk in the bag. He'd stick that note from my daddy under the drawer to the cash register. I always noticed that. He'd raise up the drawer, and when he opened up his cash register, he'd stick that note underneath. Take me over the door, and he'd say, "Now, little Georgie, you go right straight home." I guess maybe he thought I was going to go downtown, you know, maybe go down to the Ritz Bar and tip a couple of beers or something, and my daddy'd be home waiting for bread and milk. He always tell me, "You go right straight home, little Georgie." So I'd take the bread and milk tucked under my arm, and I'd walk the half block home. You know, we just lived up the street there, about half a block, three doors up, so it was next to Mrs. Swain. Anyway, a legal question comes up. Yep, a legal question comes up. When little Georgie leaves Harry's store and he's walking home, he's going by Mrs. Wright's house, you know, that's the first one. Who owns the bread and milk? You ever think about that? Now think about this. Harry doesn't have the bread and milk anymore. He alienated himself from it, gave it to little Georgie. It's gone. But he hasn't been paid. Little Georgie's in possession. We just saw that over here. You know, in a strict legal sense, the guy that's in possession is the owner. And you know, the possessor owns 9 points. Possession is 9 points of the law. And then there's Daddy Gordon. You know, could he be the owner? Think about that. How in the hell could Daddy Gordon be the owner of the bread and milk? He's not in possession and he hasn't paid for it. See how crazy that is? So when I ask this question in class, you know, people, they look at that and they say, well, little Georgie's in possession. Most people think it's Harry. They think, nope, it's Harry. He's the guy that owns the bread and milk. He hasn't been paid. And some people will reason, well, little Georgie can't own the bread and milk because he's underage, number one, but he's an agent. And that's correct. So let me straighten you out here. See, when you put a package out here in the post office, they don't own it. It is true, they're in possession, but they're an agent. Agents don't own property. They get paid for delivering it. They get paid for holding it. They get paid for handling it, but they don't own it. So it has to be Daddy or Harry. Can't be little Georgie. He's underage. Hell, he couldn't own it anyway. Doesn't have capacity. Now, it's pretty obvious Daddy couldn't own it because Daddy ain't in possession and Daddy didn't pay for it. Harry ain't been paid. He's not in possession, but he hadn't been paid. Who's got the best claim to this property? You know, if we had a Hertz car out here, same thing. Well, wait a minute. You rented it and you paid the rent on it. Hertz isn't in possession of it. You are. Who owns the car? Well, wait a minute. You own the car. You own the right to use it, and Hertz can't take it away from you. But you don't own it. Hertz owns the physical property of the car, but you own the right to use it. That's called the subject of property. Hertz owns the property, but you have the subject of property and you own it. It's an aggregate of rights. All right. Now, if you thought that Harry owned the bread and milk, you're dead wrong. Harry doesn't own the bread and milk because he's not in possession and he alienated himself from the property. He voluntarily gave it away. Yes, sir. That's the way that game is played. And when he gave it away, it's gone. It's like giving your money to the Salvation Army or to the Red Cross. When you drop your money in the kettle, son, it's gone. G-O-N, gone. Salvation Army owns that 50-cent piece now. Well, which really isn't true because, you know, if you drop a dollar bill and there'd be a Federal Reserve note and the Federal Reserve owns the bill, God, it's getting kind of complicated, isn't it? Who in the hell owns this thing? You know, when we get down to the bottom line, you know, well, who actually owns this? Okay. Well, the answer is Daddy Gordon owns it because Daddy Gordon issued the note. Yes, sirree, Bob. Daddy Gordon issued that note, which is called a discharge. It's not a payment. It's called a discharge. And when you discharge your obligation in equity, you don't own it. When you register your car, you don't own it. You might have owned it, but after you registered it, you gave it to somebody. You alienated yourself from the property. They've got a thingy over here called the American Jersey Cattle Club. They send me letters once in a while and say, hey, Gordon, we know you've got Jersey cattle and they're purebred, and why don't you join the Jersey Cattle Club and register your cattle? I don't want to register my cattle with the Jersey Cattle Club. I don't want to give my cows to the Jersey Cattle Club. That's what happens when you register your car, you know. You give it to the state. You alienate yourself from it. And that's the way you transfer property. You've got to alienate yourself, otherwise somebody would be stealing it. So the state isn't stealing your car. They cunningly coerce you into waiving your rights to ownership by persuasion, don't they? You want to drive this car on the highway? Huh? You don't want the highway patrolman to stop you and race out with you because you ain't got our license plate on there? Okay, well, you better come in here and register and pay us our rent every year. And that's the way that game is played. Now, let me ask you this. As it relates to my white front dresser. See, I had a dresser in my apartment, and I paid $140 for that dresser. I gave the white front store seven $20 bills and a little change for sales tax. I walked out of there with a receipt marked paid in full. I didn't walk out with a bill of sale now. I walked out with a receipt. Did you ever notice when you walk out of a store, they don't give you a bill of sale. They give you a receipt. And so here I am. I've got my white front dresser in my bedroom. The county assessor wants to come in there and assess it and charge me a tax. He wants to charge me rent for the use of my dresser. Who owns the dresser that I bought at White Front for $140 with Daddy's notes that are marked Federal Reserve notes all over the front of them? Who do you think? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The Federal Reserve owns that dresser. Well, let me ask you this. You're wearing a shirt, wearing glasses, and you got a wristwatch on, right? Who owns the watch, the shirt, and the glasses? Hey, how did you pay for them? Did you pay your debt at law, or did you discharge your obligation in equity? Payment versus discharge. Now, that's an interesting story to talk about. We'll do that next time. We'll take up payment versus discharge from Stanek versus White, and I'll show you how that little game is played. But just before we get to that, let me tell you the answer to the riddle, and then I'll show you the riddle next time. When you try to pay a debt with a piece of paper, like a Federal Reserve note or a 3x5 card, you have to have the Federal Reserve note or the 3x5 card, otherwise you'd be stealing. You'd be in violation of thou shalt not steal. So to avoid thou shalt not steal, you need to be able to persuade the owner, the possessor, the holder in due course, to alienate himself from his property. So I stuck seven $20 bills up in front of the White Front clerk, and I persuaded her to alienate herself and White Front stores from their dresser. But I didn't pay for it. I didn't extinguish the debt. I transferred the note, which is a debt note, from the Federal Reserve to the White Front store. And they voluntarily accepted it and then alienated themselves from their dresser, just like Harry alienated himself from the bread and milk, which made the issuer of the note the new owner under the Uniform Commercial Code, under Superior Title, under the UCC-1-103. Now, isn't that just real special? And we think that we own the watch, we own the shirt, we own the dresser, we own our guns, and we haven't paid for any of it. And as a matter of law, it belongs to the Federal Reserve. As old William Bendix used to say, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. And with that, boys and girls, I got to give you a final reminder that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, find my paper. Here it is. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.